listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
The Tennis.com podcast is back again. As usual, Ed McGrogan here with Steve Tigner. Thank you for tuning in. And Steve and I want to touch upon, on a rare Monday podcast, these have kind of drifted off into the weekdays, but we wanted to look back on a pretty eventful week, I thought, Steve, in Washington. And this was a tournament that for a little while, really the past, maybe if you go back about 5 or 6 years, and this is back when, you know, when U.S. tournaments were a little more plentiful, you still had tournaments like Indianapolis. And Washington, you know, has always, as the Legg Mason in its earlier days, always had a spot in the calendar. It's brought upon a WTA event. It got some really good coverage on Tennis Channel, which I thought was worth pointing out. That's actually the reason I found out that it's technically not even part of the U.S. Open Series because of its deal with them and Lagardère and all this. But overall, this was a pretty enjoyable week, I thought, you know, before we get into the big Masters events, which is what we always look forward to.
Yeah, I think D.C., you know, I think we said it last week, it's become a bigger event than it was. It sort of got lost, I think, in the U.S. Open Series when there were more events. Now it seems like it's become more essential for players from overseas to come over and play this one. It's a 500 level. It has a women's draw. Like you said, there's a lot of TV and media coverage there, which makes sense because it's in a good, you know, it's in a good market. But yeah, I've been surprised. You know, it almost feels like you've got three important lead-up tournaments to the U.S. Open now, with Canada and Cincy, of course, and D.C. has kind of taken its place, just maybe a step below those.
Yeah, the other one which we probably won't speak to as much is Stanford, that was won by Angelique Kerber, won her fourth title of the year, actually. Not sure how much of that you saw. The one that I want to pay attention to is one that you just wrote about, and that's Sloane Stephens winning the City Open in D.C., winning so very convincingly in the final, 6-2, 6-1, 6-2 over Pavlyuchenkova. That's, you know, a result I don't think anybody would have expected, certainly not coming into the week. But as you wrote in your piece, Steve, which I thought was a very good take on everything, that this is a win for Sloane Stephens that's worth paying attention to, and that you could play down the nature of the event and all that, and that it's finally, you know, it's taken her so long to get this title, but I think that's not really the point, and that, you know, in this crowded calendar where so many things happen and so many things can change in an instant, Sloane did a lot this week to look at.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can easily put a lot of caveats on this. It's not a big tournament. Pavlyuchenkova didn't play that well in the final. Sloane didn't beat anybody who was in the top 20 last week. So, you know, you could say all those things, but I think at least for today, it's really just worth, you know, celebrating this win, or for her to celebrate this win, without worrying about the future for once. That's something that seems to have hurt her in the past, is the expectations. And here's her first real full success on tour after 84 tournaments. I mean, a lot, you know, most players don't ever reach a final or win a tournament, but she was, and I hadn't realized this, the only player in the top 40 who had never been to a final before this week. So it's a big breakthrough, and I think you can see how much she wanted it in the semis, how much she wanted just to make the final against Sam Stosur. Sloane was much fought harder, was more positive, I thought, than what we've seen from her in the past. And I think in the final, she really just showed a lot of variety, you know, a lot of different aspects of her game that you might, that she hasn't, you know, they might not know about, or her, you know, she's not just a power player. She showed a lot of different things that she can do. And it seems like just having, not being the focus anymore of the U.S. attention, and just kind of going about her business, going back to her old coach, that has been enough to sort of, I feel like she's back on her normal normal path now, maybe the path she would have been on if she hadn't beaten Serena and made the semis of the Australian Open 2 years ago. She can sort of take it step by step, and that's, I feel like that's what she's done this year.
Yeah, see, that is the cliff notes of your piece, without a doubt. There's a lot, I think, to touch upon there. First off, when I was looking for photos just to build this piece, it struck me as, you know, we weren't seeing these dour, just glum images of her that we've just become so accustomed to. In the past few years, I mean, really the past year or so, her matches have not been a pleasure to watch because we often haven't seen the best of her, and you get that just by looking at the results. You know, this was her first final, as you say. I had to double check that. I was just surprised that was actually true, that someone who has gone so deep and at quite a few of the slams and you know, obviously has fallen a little bit on hard times with all the pressure that's been put on her, but he finally does get to this final and, you know, takes that further step right away. Nick Saviano seems like a big part of this too, as you say. It's interesting now to really contrast that with what's gone with his former pupil, Eugenie Bouchard, who decided to move on from Saviano last year, and we're seeing, you know, obviously a totally different side of the coin with her. She's playing really just as poorly as Sloane did at times prior to that. And then, you know, the biggest thing I think, kind of, because I think you've hit on everything as it pertains to this week, but, you know, going forward, I will talk about going forward a little bit with Sloane, as you bring up about her abilities as a player and how she showed a lot more of that this week in D.C., but ultimately, is her key to long-term success, you know, whether that means titles or more deep runs or something bigger than that, is it her power game, her obvious power talents, what's going to take her there? Or can Saviano and her seem to develop more of a lethal kind of all-around, a better overall game of tennis?
I think the overall game is the way to go for her. She can hit big, but she can do more than that. She's got good hands. She's got a good court sense. Got a nice serve. She doesn't, you know, she's not a huge hitter, hit or miss sort of the way Madison Keys is, say, or Stosur. I think Sloane doesn't have that all out power, but does have the potential for more variety. So I feel like what she showed yesterday is what sort of could be, you know, a decisive aspect of her game, a something that she has an advantage over her opponents. You know, we'll see. It's really just, I feel like it's mental with her, in being positive, not being negative, believing that she can win. You know, we've seen her do well and then not do well again. So I don't know if this is a corner that she's turned fully, but it's something that she can, it's definitely something, a milestone in itself, I'd say.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The other side of DC, the men's event, a pretty, as we said last week, not too long ago, it's just a few days really, a pretty nice field, and we have a final of John Isner, Kei Nishikori. Both players, we brought up each of these guys last week. You brought up Nishikori as, you know, this is kind of a, really this whole stretch of August is a kind of a pivotal time perhaps for Nishikori. He wins this week over Isner in three sets. I watched a lot of this, a lot of the weekend actually in general. Nishikori, you know, down a set, tough conditions. DC is always one of those events that when people talk about the dog days, you know, in the summertime, a lot of people point to them, to that event, Cincinnati. But Nishikori, you know, he comes back. He basically does what you have to do against Isner, is find a way to break once, and then it's more or less home sailing, because that's pretty much all that's going to decide sets one way or the other. One thing that was pointed out in that broadcast that I keep forgetting and perhaps not giving enough credit to Nishikori to is his record in the third set of matches. I think it was something like best or second all time amongst about, given the number of matches he's played. He has quite a record in that stage of matches. Hasn't always brought it in the biggest events, and I guess that's, you know, where we go from here from Nishikori. But he did also beat Marin Cilic in the semis to atone a bit for last year's U.S. Open. So, before getting to anyone else, I mean, this was obviously a nice week for Nishikori and kind of sets himself up very well going forward this month.
Yeah, I had said at the beginning of the tournament that this seemed like a perfect week for him to really take a step forward. You know, only Andy Murray of the Big Four was there. It's a surface he likes. He hasn't done that well at Masters events, but this was a 500 where he's been successful at that level. You know, it just seemed like a prime week for him to get ready for the U.S. Open, or even just to show that he can win, he can be, you know, win this tournament and possibly do something at the Masters. That seems like really the next step for him is to do something at a Masters event. But yeah, he won two close matches in the end, and he really has been good in final sets. I don't know what it is, like you said, that he doesn't necessarily do that at the Grand Slam. He lost the fifth set to Song at the French Open this year. But I would think, you know, it just seems like whenever he gets anything rolling, he has a physical problem. I feel like this is another time when you don't have Federer in Montreal. This is, you know, it seems like another opening for him, you know, this coming week.
Yes, yeah, you pointed out that he does have a little sort of a draw that could go his way if he plays up to his potential up north there. We'll get into those in just a second. The rest of the weekend, you know, you had two Americans worth discussing in D.C. Steve Johnson had basically a career run to the semis, but had just as tough a way to exit the tournament. Him and Isner ended up trading three match points apiece, and the first one that was on either player's serve was Johnson's. He was up 6-4, I believe, in a third set breaker. And what was a pretty compelling match. You had the crowd obviously has a lot invested in a match like that. Both guys, I thought, played well. You know, both kind of really brought out the best in each other. Johnson ends up losing, you know, of all things, kind of an extended rally to Isner, and otherwise would have put him in his first final. Overall, though, that was a nice week for him, someone who's really seems to get the most really out of everything he's got, but and has done pretty well in the rankings too to reflect that. And then Isner, you know, goes to the final. Like I said, you know, had the edge on Nishikori early on. I thought kind of got worn down as the match progressed. To me, I always kind of, whenever I see Isner go deep at kind of this long stretch of good play, because he actually has kind of been a pretty streaky player really over the years is what I've noticed. And I always wonder really, you know, is he really at his ceiling? Is this kind of really what it is what you get? And I don't think you could argue that's the case for Isner. I think that's perfectly fine to say. But I guess, you know, it'll be interesting to see what, of course, he does. He has had some success in Masters event in Cincinnati before he reached the final, and, you know, remains to be seen if he'll even play this week in Canada after 2 weeks in a row. But overall, that's a pretty good week for both guys, you know, in general.
Yeah, that match was that was a great match, the Isner-Johnson match. It was exciting anyway in the end. Johnson beat Dimitrov, and he beat Jack Sock, who didn't seem that into it in the second set of their match. You know, Johnson's a guy I think has a ceiling, but he's a guy who's always going to try his hardest. Isner, I feel like, you know, this is his time of year. You know, is there a way for him to avoid burning out here, or to start to, you know, not just do well in this time of year, but do something at the U.S. Open or take another step forward. I don't really know. I think there was a sense, even when he won the first set against Nishikori, but when he started, he had a shoulder problem in the second set, and it seemed like Nishikori just showed that he's the better player. And I think John even said that afterwards. He feels like it's about as good as they get from the baseline. And it kind of, you know, Isner had done what he gone as far as he could against him.
Sure. Yeah. Quick few things on Canada. You know, look at, first of all, read Steve's pretty exhaustive bracket breakdowns on the site for both men and women's events. I guess, what are you most looking forward to, just in general, of this coming week for Canada on the men's and women's side? Obviously, you just mentioned there's quite a couple big pullouts. You know, Federer, of course, you mentioned Sharapova also out on the women's side. We'll get to see. You know, I think Rafa's a fairly big story to kind of see where he goes as he enters the hardcourt stretch of this season for him. There's Serena, of course, and maybe that's really is, you know, the story, and it should be probably this whole summer as we head to Flushing Meadows.
Yeah, I guess you start with Serena. Well, how's she going to start off here? What's her game going to be like? If she has any physical problems, how long will she stick around? You know, what's her state of mind going into, you know, what will probably be the biggest tournament of her career at the U.S. Open? I think you also look at Venus Williams, who got to the finals of this tournament last year. Is she somebody who can challenge Serena? She has a tough first round. Azarenka as well. We saw her get better through the spring at the French Open and Wimbledon, but lose to Serena. And on the men's side, I feel like Rafa is a good story, a good question mark. You know, you sort of feel like maybe he could do something at this tournament. I picked him to make the final. You know, it's something of a long shot. He'd have to beat Murray. But I feel like Nadal likes playing in Montreal. He's won this tournament twice, and he has the memory of one of his first big wins in 2005 here. So that, you know, I think it'll be interesting. It wouldn't be surprising if he had a breakout tournament here. You know, of course, he could go the other way, but I feel like, you know, there seem to be good signs from him.
Yeah, and you made a good point about Djokovic as well, who will also be playing, of course, in that. In that last summer, it was so strange to see him really kind of fade after winning Wimbledon. In what was a huge win for him, I think everybody realized that, of kind of this little slump he had at the slams, and you know, having Boris Becker in his camp trying to really justify that in a way. And we just didn't see any sort of follow-up from Djokovic as he headed to North America after. I do think, as good as a player as Nishikori is, that's a semifinal at the Open that Djokovic would probably love to have back there. And should he continue on the plane that he's on this year, I mean, we could be talking about really one of the great seasons, and certainly comparable to his 2011 season. So, you know, for Djokovic, I think this is also a curious portion of the year as we go toward New York.
Yeah, I think this, you know, it would be a surprise if he came out as flat as he did last year. Last year he lost 6-2, 6-2 to Tsonga in Toronto. He lost to Robredo in Cincy, and then he lost to Nishikori at the Open. Those are three matches, like you say, he'd like to have back. But historically, though, he's done well at this time of year. He likes this tournament. He also had a big early career title in Montreal, where I think he beat Federer and Nadal in the same tournament.
Yes, he did.
It feels like he's steadier. He's better this year than he was last year. I think he'll come out and be fine at this event. It's really hard to pick against him winning it with Federer out of the event. Djokovic is definitely still the favorite.
Yeah. We'll be on Canada pretty regularly this week, so please tune in to tennis.com. Follow tennis on Twitter at tennis, and of course Steve Tigner and myself on there as well. So chime in and tune back in again next week for the tennis.com podcast. Thank you all for listening.
You've been enjoying the tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to tennis.com.